So, hi, everybody. This is the daily show that you've come to love, I hope. That is very different because we hold no punches, so look for it whenever you can. In today's edition, we're going to recap a week of the wild headlines across the globe from, well, a Speaker of the House, that is, who says he bases his foreign policy decisions on his bizarre readings of the Bible. To a movement that is growing across college campuses with students saying, enough killing, enough wars, cease fire now. That's becoming a huge story, as a matter of fact. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. All right, this is going to be interesting today. And before we get into those stories, I want to introduce our esteemed panel, our prestigious panel for today. We are joined by political scientist Dr. Wilmer Leon and political commentator Garland Nixon, both our co-hosts of the Critical Hour. Catch it, it's good, especially when they have me on as a guest on Radio Sputnik. All right, so here we go. One of the most followed business networks in the United States has come out and is now confirming what Russian President Vladimir Putin told Tucker Carlson. It was ignored or discredited by Western media at the time that Mr. Putin said it. But now the IMF has come out and confirmed, that's the International Monetary Fund, they're a big deal, that Russia's economy, despite serious sanctions and other castigations, of which there have been many, has in fact surpassed the GDP growth of every single country in the G7, including the United States of America. So now that we know it's true, let's take another listen to Mr. Putin. Maybe this time they'll believe him.
Russia was the first economy in Europe last year, despite all the sanctions and restrictions. Is it normal from your point of view? Sanctions, restrictions, impossibility of payments in dollars, being cut off from SWIFT services, sanctions against our ships carrying oil, sanctions against airplanes, sanctions in everything, everywhere. The largest number of sanctions in the world which are applied against Russia. And we have become Europe's first economy during this time.
So, you know, it's amazing. The United States and NATO, of course, back then, we remember, they told us, we're going to crush them. We're going to crush them with these sanctions. Well, look at this. Take a look at this chart. Look at that. That's Russia across the top there. What they're measuring here, by the way, is GDP growth, which is the most important and best way to measure the economy of any country. Not total GDP, but GDP growth. In other words, where are you and where are you going? Look at Russia at the very top. Now look at the United States right behind it, barely at what, two? Right? And then you have the rest of the countries there that are in, you know, coming in just behind it, as a matter of fact, as I'm sitting here reading it. You got Japan coming in around 2.0, Canada around 1.5, France is coming in around 1, the UK around 0.5. Compare that to what we're, look at Germany. I mean, Germany's below 0.4, below a 0.5, and actually on the negative scale, if you look at what they have been doing recently. So, you know, I find this to be, gentlemen, a fascinating story, because I'll be honest with you, you know, Putin's a politician, let's face it. When he said it, I thought, I bet you he's stretching the story a little bit. He wasn't.
No. first of all, I believe that not only is he an attorney, but he has a PhD in economics.
Oh, there you go.
Sanctions don't work. We're going to turn the ruble into rubble, is what President Biden told us. Mm. And what we know is that sanctions don't work. They are more so political measures so that Joe Biden can tell us that we're actually doing something. Mm. What sanctions tend to do is they strengthen the power of the person in charge of the country being sanctioned because the sense of nationalism grows in the country as that leader can say, your plight is not dire because of me, look at what they are doing to us. Mm. And that then heightens the sense of nationalism, and so you really wind up creating a circumstance that you claim you're trying to defeat.
And in concrete terms, they basically, those sanctions made Russian oil more expensive, And more countries wanted it. And India said, I'll take it. You guys don't want it.
And China said they'll take it, too.
And China said the same thing. And Iran said the same thing. So apparently it actually has helped them in their energy sector.
Yeah, and so, in fact, the growth of Russia and the Russia basically lapping the G7 countries wasn't in spite of the sanctions, it was because of the sanctions.
Yes,
because of the sanctions caused the G7 countries to have slower growth and Russia to have faster growth. Mm. Because Russia is in the industrial arena.
Be careful what you wish for.
Exactly. The sanctions are bound to hurt the West more because we have our money, most of our GDP is made in the fire, what they call finance, insurance, and real estate, which are banking-related and easily subjected to be hurt by sanctions. Russia sells hard things. People need commodities, and they'll go around the around any kind of sanctions to get the commodities because they can't run their economies without them.
It's a fascinating piece. Finish up on this because we're going to go to the next topic.
Why is Germany's GDP in the tank? Because they don't have access to cheap Russian natural gas.
And they're the worst. Did you see that number? They're at the very bottom of the list.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah, because now they get less gas. They got to pay more for it.
And the United States has deindustrialized their economy.
And India's sitting there going, yeah, baby, I like this deal. Amazing. Let's go to Columbia University. It's not just Columbia University, by the way, but that's where some of the bigger protests have taken place, although NYU, Yale, calling for a ceasefire, and they are not alone. 200 universities across the United States now have seen pro-Palestinian and anti-genocide protests. Here's what it looks like at Yale, NYU, and Columbia University. You guys have seen what's going on. The mayor of New York says he's prohibiting protests now. They've called the police in to arrest the students. Essentially, they are just protesting. As far as I know, have they said and done some mean things? I'm sure they have. But last time I checked, the Constitution says you can say whatever the hell you want about anybody, and you can be mean.
This is an attack on the First Amendment, which Michael Johnson and so many others are now trying to do away with.
Mm-hmm.
And the really interest, basically, the Israeli lobby, the Zionist lobby, has lost the debate. They've lost the argument. And these are the last gasps of them trying to salvage some semblance of legitimacy. And one of the things that is really telling, not only looking at Columbia, looking at Berkeley, looking at Harvard, Jackson Reed High School in Washington, D.C. The Arab student organization at the Jackson Reed High School, through the ACLU, is suing the principal of the school for denying the Arab American students from showing a documentary at lunch. So what says that the unrest, the protest is now at the high school level in this country.
That's saying
they
something.
Have lost the argument.
Hmm. Well, you know, the other thing to keep in mind, I guess, in the context of politics is this. 2008, 2012, Barack Obama won. Those are the people that won for him. The Democratic Party over the last several elections have gone out of the way to make sure, and reasonably so, that there were polling places on all of the college campuses. I don't think they need to waste their time doing that in 2020.
No, as a matter of fact, I've heard from insiders in the Biden administration that they're shooting for old people to come out and vote for. When was the last time you heard the Democratic Party was going to depend on old people to vote? That's usually a Republican Party thing. Speaking of old people, or at least old thinking people, you mentioned Mike Johnson. Mike Johnson, he has told us that his position on Gaza and what he's doing there at Columbia comes from his reading of the Bible. In other words, the Bible, or the way he interprets the Bible, not the way most, I'm a Christian, I don't interpret the Bible that way. Most Christians don't. But the way he interprets the Bible makes him determine how he's going to vote on foreign policy, especially on wars and especially on Israel. His words, here they are.
Israel is a critical ally of ours, and I think most people understand the necessity of this funding. They're fighting for their very existence. They're the only stable democracy in the Middle East. I mean, of course, there's, for those of us who are believers, it's a biblical admonition to stand with Israel. We will, and they will prevail as long as they're with them. And this is an important, very important symbolic gesture and a very important replenishment of their stockpiles, for example, of the Iron Dome. The reason they shot down all those drones and missiles in the last attack by Iran is because we assisted with that. I think the American people understand the importance of that.
For those, did you hear that? hold on, right here. For those of us who are believers, this is a biblical admonition.
Well, and that's the worst part is that he referred to Israel as a stable democracy. Stable democracy? The people are literally in the street screaming for the head of their leader. At the same time, they're bombing and slaughtering half of the population. I don't think that's the definition of a democracy.
But wait a minute. Haven't we had these discussions in this country over the last 10 years about how we never want to be like the Taliban and some of those other extremist organizations in the Middle East and other parts of the world who are religious, that are religious theocracies? You have to do how they interpret their God's commandments, and that's what they will make you do, whether it has to do with how women dress or whether they can drive. We were all against that, and we've got this guy. Isn't he doing the same thing?
I think Thomas Jefferson told us that the First Amendment was to prevent or to protect the separation of church and state. Mike Johnson is really speaking to the Christian evangelicals, and he's also speaking to the Christian Zionists. He's not really speaking...
Who are the same people?
He's not really speaking to the broader American electorate. Mm. He wants to be sure that he garners and protects the support of those religious zealots. And there's a reason why we don't base our public policy on biblical interpretation, because different people interpret those works different ways.
Unless you're a country where you can only be one religion. Let's see, who can I think of that's like that? The Jewish state of Israel, but go on.
Well, he certainly couldn't make an argument under international law. He certainly couldn't make an argument that he was representing the constituents because of the country, but because the polls say that people want a permanent ceasefire. So I guess all he had left was to reach into his religious bag and, as Wilmer said, reach out to what they consider a very important element in their party.
We're talking about also his visit to Columbia University, and then there's another guy who's going around. He didn't get booed. He didn't go to Columbia University. He went to China. We're talking about Anthony Blinken. He is the Secretary of State of the United States of America, and he's again telling China what they need to do, and China is telling him what he can do with it. We're going to play that for you when we come back. Stay right there. All right, so we told you about a self-righteous individual who decided to take it upon himself to go to Columbia University and tell protesters that they can't protesters and that they're all bad people for doing so. Here's another self-righteous individual. His name is Anthony Blinken. Happens to be the state Secretary of State of the United States of America. Visited China this week. Shows up, getting off the plane. They didn't boo him, but you got to figure they probably wanted to. Chinese officials put out this statement directed right at Blinken. It seems to let him know in no uncertain terms, that China does not appreciate the meddling in their affairs. The U.S., as I'm sure you know, because we've reported it here many times, just gave Taiwan $8 billion in money and weapons so they can use it in an eventual war against China. Well, how do you think China reacted to that? Let's listen.
The Taiwan issue is China's internal affair, which tolerates no external interference. The insertion of Taiwan-related content into the U.S. congressional bill seriously violates the One China principle and the free joint communiques of China and the U.S. and sends a wrong signal to the separatist forces in Taiwan. We are formally opposed to it. We urge the U.S. side to honor its commitment of not supporting Taiwan independence with concrete actions and stop arming Taiwan in any way.
Did you hear that? Stop arming Taiwan in any way. That's a directive, I guess, that they're giving the United States. The United States is obviously not going to stop. It's fascinating to think that somebody would give your enemy $8 billion so they can attack you and kill you. And then the next week, or actually just a few days later, show up at your doorstep with flowers to say, hey, how are you? Thought I'd come by and maybe we could have a chat. I'm just not sure I could do something like that. In Spanish, it's called having a very hard face. This guy's got to have a really hard face.
Well, it was interesting that that statement included the One China policy. So what she was saying was, you are violating your own stated policy. And also, there was no red carpet for Tony Blinken. He walked off the plane, stepped onto the tarmac. There was nobody there to greet him. And what this is really a replay of what we saw in Anchorage a couple of years ago. If you remember when he met with the Chinese delegation in Anchorage, they got up and walked out the room because they told Tony Blinken, we are not going to sit here and allow you to lecture us. We're China. Do you know how much of your debt we hold? We're not going to sit here and listen to this.
And don't tell us about human rights. We've been seeing what's going on with Black Lives Matter on the streets of your country, she said.
And don't tell us about free markets.
Yeah.
Because we are engaging in a free market system. And for some reason now, America, you don't like the free market anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a peculiar situation that's going on with China. And it's extremely peculiar to think that, and a lot of people maybe don't know this, but Taiwan, in China's eyes, is a province of theirs. They see China the way we see Texas. And imagine if tomorrow Texas, which by the way, Texas has said this, says we want to separate ourselves from the rest of the union. We don't like those liberals in Washington. We don't want to be a part of the United States anymore. And by the way, you guys have screwed up our border, so we're going to go on our own. And the next day, China or Russia or some other country says, here's $8 billion, some tanks and some warplanes so you can use against Washington. How would we like that? That's what China says we're doing.
Absolutely. And there's another underlying story to this that I think is critical. The Wall Street Journal and a number of other media outlets reported that the U.S. Congress was preparing sanctions for China's, some of their banks, for some of their economic system, their financial system, with the allegation being that Tony Blinken will tell them to stop supporting the Russians, and if they don't stop supporting the Russians, they'll be sanctioned. But I think the Chinese understand that's just a pretext, that the U.S. is, once they plan those sanctions, the sanctions are coming, whether it's now, whether it's 3 weeks from now, that's the Uyghurs. So I think they're not going to play into that game.
But what's interesting about what you just said that I think many in our audience would probably find fascinating as well is they're doing everything. The United States seems to want to do everything possible to break up this global South community.
Yes.
They don't like the fact that suddenly China and Russia are buddy-buddy. Iran, China, and Russia are now buddy-buddy. Iran is becoming buddy-buddy with, of all people, Saudi Arabia. Meanwhile, India's in with Russia and China at the same time. This is starting to look like a formidable
North Koreans are visiting around.
Why?
What do you mean?
In response to American sanctions.
Oh, yeah.
China and Russia, for the most part, have enhanced their relationship primarily in response to sanctions. And Iran has gotten into the mix. Why? In response to sanctions. And what the United States cannot accept the fact that the reality here is the geopolitical landscape has shifted from a unipolar world to a multipolar world.
Yeah.
And there's not a thing that anybody can do to stop it.
Except maybe start World War III, which sometimes I think is what we're kind of doing by arming China's enemy. All right, let's talk social media before we go. Twitter, or X, or whatever the hell it's called, owner Elon Musk has accused the Australian government of trying to make decisions for the entire world. It happened because Australian authorities have chosen to try and remove a video of a gang member going into a church. This is sick. And he stabbed the priest or the minister while he was doing his sermon or his homily, which caused a lot of disturbances in Australia. It's a pretty ugly scene. People are very upset where it happened. So Australia's prime minister thinks now that Elon Musk is a spoiled billionaire who should stay the hell out of Australia's affairs. And he said so. Here it is. I'm going to play it for you.
Well, this guy is showing his arrogance. He's a billionaire over there in the United States who thinks he's above Australian law. This isn't about censorship. It's about common sense and common decency. And Elon Musk should show some.
Wow. So what do you think of that? Well, sorry, I was trying to do the accent. Yeah. I couldn't quite capture it.
Well, it shows the great contradiction, because if I try to go after Twitter or social media and I say, hey, you can't censor me, they'll say, sorry, Garland, this is a corporation, an individual corporation. They can put anything they want on. You can't sue them for First Amendment violations. Mm-hmm. But then the government can come back and say, we can tell them what they can and can't put on because the government doesn't like it, because we'll decide that it's in the best interest of the people or not. A tremendous contradiction there.
Yeah, this is hard, because as a journalist, I think I'm an absolutist. I think everything should be fair play and let the viewer decide what's good or bad. However, when you're looking at a priest being stabbed in the heart by some 16-year-old teenager, and the community doesn't want to see it, and it's causing disturbances, I understand why Australia is saying, please take this off. We don't want our people seeing this.
Well, it's not only Australia. How many times, and we've seen this being in D.C., the city under siege, we see this all the time, where a shooting has occurred, mm-hmm. it's on video, and what do they say? First of all, they say, this is very disturbing. If you don't want to watch it, turn away.
Right.
And the other thing they say is, we're stopping the video right before the shot is fired,
right. yes.
so that you don't have to be subjected to watching this on your television screen.
Yeah, by the way, as a former producer and editor in local news for many years, obviously in Miami, as a lot of people might remember, we did have a rule, and the rule is, we'll never make you watch someone die. Mm-hmm. You'll mm-hmm. never see someone die, because it's just too much. It's over the pale. And I do believe that there should be certain standards in social media, but who the hell makes the decisions?
And
who's it up to? Is it the government, or is it Elon Musk and his panel of experts who sometimes go one way, but then other times go another way?
And the government, particularly Australia, they opened this can of worms. You know, during COVID, no one was worse than Australia as far as, you know, censorship. So they opened this can of worms by doing so much censorship that now the public scrutinizes it every time the government wants to censor something and say, hey, you wouldn't let me do this. What about you? So they created this monster for themselves.
You wanted to say.
Well, the other question to me is, Elon Musk, what's your point? How many folks, to your earlier point, Garland, have been deplatformed on Twitter?
Yeah.
But beyond
me?
That, and I.
Yeah.
But beyond that, where's the upside to this argument? I mean, you're saying that we need to see a gang member stab a priest at the altar. Why? Why do we need to
No,
see
that's
it?
A very, very
yeah,
good question.
Good point.
That's a very good. By the way, guys, before we go, how do you think this whole thing is going to end up with these protests? I mean, it's starting to pick up steam. I was really surprised to see the Speaker of the House show up at Columbia yesterday and start telling everybody what to do or what they can and can't say. But it shows, maybe it says something.
What does it say? It speaks volumes. As I said earlier, they have lost control of the narrative. And the last kicks of a dying mule will be the most desperate. And that's what we are. And $67,000 a year tuition in Columbia, and you're going to kick my child out of school for peacefully protesting? You think you got a protest with my kid? You're going to have a protest with me.
Yeah, yeah. Where do you think it's going, Garland?
No, I think it's going to continue to grow.
Absolutely.
It's gotten out of hand. It's going to continue to grow. And I think it's going to, and from a positive perspective, that it's going to blossom into the anti-war movement that we need before these lunatics attack China or whoever else.
Do you think Johnson did this because, I mean, the money that he approved after saying he wouldn't, and he said the hell with the border, didn't do crap for the border, not one penny for the border, not one plum nickel, as we like to say. Do you think he did that because of the $9 million that he got from donations, or do you think he really believes that his interpretation of biblical times makes him need to do that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because one of the things that happened, apparently he was briefed by the intelligence community, and let's face it, everybody in Congress, they're horrified of the intelligence community, and once they hear that, they get afraid.
But the intelligence community has lied over and over again. We know that.
I don't think it's the veracity. I think it is the fear that they'll get, you know, Epsteined or something.
Or won't get money. Won't get money from contractors. Yeah.
AIPAC has committed $100 million to this 2024 election. And when you look at the campaign contributions, I think he was told where to go, he was told what to say, he was told what to do.
And if he loses his job, I think he's got a golden parachute waiting for him.
You two gentlemen are the best and deserve the biggest of golden parachutes, maybe even the goldest of the goldest. Before we go, I just want to remind you of our mission here. It's pretty simple, really. You know, we kind of want to de-silo things. We don't think truths live in little boxes. I think truths are everywhere. That's what we believe. This is Direct Impact. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'll be looking for you again.